Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Right, welcome to the Shackles Are Off podcast, and yes, we know it's been a while, and we do apologise, but things have been pretty busy for both Chris and I, and we've been thinking about the podcast, haven't we, Chris? Because we've been trying to, you know, speak to a few guests and have a little chat, make sure that we've got a nice little chunky series for people to get their teeth stuck into. I think that's probably the best way forward, right?
Yeah, I'd probably suggest it's getting their ears stuck into rather than their teeth. But no, it's we're hoping to have a good 6 week run at it for you with some unbelievable guests. We'll be honest, we've already got some in the tank, and I reckon we've got some of the best guests we've had on in a long time. So long may it continue.
Yep, that's right. So keep your eyes peeled, and also just tell your mates about the podcast, because, well, I mean, we've been doing it for, what, 3 years now, and all these Johnny Come Latelys are trying to get guests on and stuff. Our back catalogue is the best. It just is, right? It just is. Out of all the cricket podcasts out there, we've got an incredible back catalogue. So tell people to have a little work their way through. And also, it's something we actually discussed off air. We were saying, well, some of them, you know, talking about different events and stuff. Yeah, but it's quite cool. A little look into the looking glass. There's a period where it's before the White Ball World Cup, and we're talking to players about how much they're looking forward to it. It's actually quite interesting just to go back on that. So, do go back and have a check-in on that. Chris, where am I speaking to you from at the moment, by the way?
I'm currently sat in the Ibis Station Hotel at the Amsterdam Central Station.
Ah.
Yes.
Right.
It's absolutely stunning just looking out over the river, and it's absolutely beautiful. Trains and anyone that's been to Amsterdam will know how mental the bikes are. It's just how I described it to Adam, who I'm here with, just doing a recce pre-ODI tour. It's like a centre park for adults. It's absolutely unbelievable. What a place. But no, we've obviously got the ODI tour coming up in June, which is going to be huge. One of the few times the Barmy Army's been able to tour Europe, and coming off the back of the West Indies straight into this ODI tour in Europe is going to be pretty special. I know for the Test cricket fans, it's right in the middle of a test series, it's squeezed in, but let's not forget it was rearranged due to COVID. But it's going to be a hell of a tour. It's an unbelievably lovely place, and I couldn't recommend it more. It's literally a 50 minute flight. We flew from Birmingham, 50 minute flight, we're in central Amsterdam and under half an hour leaving the airport. If you can afford it, it's definitely worth doing to get that Barmy Army experience, and it literally is a stone's throw away.
Awesome. That sounds so good. And definitely. I mean, there's still tickets and places available. And I think that you should possibly, you know, definitely look into that. Because Amsterdam, right? It's so good. I want you to, Chris, just run us through. There's a fact that there is actually an opportunity to win a trip for two to Amsterdam. And not just, you know, a budget trip either. It's a bloody good trip, this one, looking at it. Courtesy of Towergate Insurance. So just run us through it, if you will, because it's through Barmy Travel, and it's a Barmy Travel package that you're getting, effectively, worth $2,000. And I want people to know how they can do it. And I'm sure that people who are listening are thinking, yeah, I fancy a piece of Amsterdam, and I don't want to do it on a shoestring either. So here's your chance.
Yeah, a lot of Amsterdam for $2,000. I'll tell you that. You can get through Barmy Travel and through our amazing partners, Towergate Insurance, you get the Barmy Travel package, which includes guaranteed official tickets to sit with the Barmy Army for the first two ODIs. So that's the Friday and the Sunday. It's going to be incredibly, incredibly big. We're expecting a sellout at the stadium, which is 7,000. So it's going to be a great atmosphere. 2 days with us on the Friday and the Sunday. Four nights accommodation and the choice of 3, 4, or 5-star accommodation. Some very nice hotels. I'm currently sat in a 3-star and it's brilliant. So I recommend that. Return flights plus airport and stadium transfers, so you don't need to worry about your transfers and getting run over by any bikes. An invitation to join exclusive Barmy Travel Forum, who the guests will be announced just before the trip, but it'll be someone very good. Of course, the Barmy Army Netherlands tour shirt, and just to top it off, a welcome drink on arrival. But to make sure that you get the chance to win that prize, and I'll be honest, we've had a lot of entries, but I reckon you've got a quite a good chance if you get the entry in now. You need to get a quote for a policy through Towergate Insurance for your home cover or travel insurance before 5 p.m. on the 13th of May. Yeah, we know that's tomorrow. We know that's tomorrow, but you will be entered into the prize draw if you go to the link that we will put in the info for the podcast, but it's towergateinsurance.co.uk/towergate-insurance-and-barmy-army/.
Right, so it's quite a lengthy thing, that, but fear not, like Chris says, we will put it in the bio of this podcast. So scroll down into the podcast notes and, well, it'll all be there. So click on that link. That's the only way you can enter. Get it done, because it's an amazing prize. And if I was available on those days, I'd definitely be entering it myself, because I'm looking at it now on my screen. I think, oh my word, it looks so good. And also, having
Greggy, just to interrupt there, you're obviously a very busy man, but we often speak a lot about what me and Brooks are doing. But what are you doing? You've got a new exciting role in your life. Give the listeners a bit of taste of what you're up to now.
I have, and it's commentary on not cricket. That would be my first choice and my first love. But unfortunately, I'm commentating on golf for Discovery Sports. So yeah, it's great. But every weekend is eating up at the moment, including chances to go to the West Indies. And I'm having a look at the cricket schedule. It's causing a real issue, actually, in terms of following England this year. I pinpointed a couple of tests in September, and that's about it. So I'm a little bit struggling. I know. So it's... Oh, there we go, but I'll still be obviously following.
You'll be on TMS or TalkSport coverage one day, mate.
I'd love to be. And we're not going to talk about which one of those I'd rather be on. Right, the West Indies tour, because we've not actually done a podcast since the West Indies tour. It looked absolutely fantastic. Looked so good. One of our guests that we've got upcoming was involved, shall we say, and guest today actually was involved in that series, and what an amazing experience for the players it was. But from a touring perspective, from a Barmy Army perspective, Chris, what a tour that was.
Yeah, what an amazing tour it was. It was everything you want from a Caribbean tour. To have it right after a cancelled Ashes tour, which is what the Barmy Army do, it's what we're about, was a real reassurance that everyone still wants to travel, still wants to support the England cricket team, even when we're not doing so well. There was huge, huge numbers there and huge positivity from everyone in the Barmy Army. Okay, it didn't go too well. I still think three sessions probably lost as a series. We're the better team in the first two tests. However, it ended the way it ended, and we're here today. But it was a brilliant tour off the field for the Barmy Army. We had some incredible parties, two sellout events in Barbados, an amazing end of tour party in Grenada. It really was special to see so many old faces there, but also so many new faces that have been, I guess, built up through 2 years of lockdown, saved up the money, wanting to go on a cricket tour, and all of a sudden we've got one available. Everyone's having a great time on tour, singing some very good new songs. And I know the guests we've got on today is probably one of the best Barmy Army songs I've heard in the years that I've been working and touring with the Barmy Army. So, yeah, it's right. It'd be right in my top five, Greg, you know.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Well, I guess this week is Sakiba Mood, as you probably already have worked out. But it's it's a really good listen, really good listen. We've got somebody else who is involved next time around here on the podcast. And it's a great guest. It's a guest that actually you and I really enjoyed speaking to, Chris. So, yeah, so we're going to... we've got a nice little bumper Stella 6 coming up. We should also talk about the fact that Ben Stokes is the New England captain. I know that you're a massive fan of that, Chris, because, I mean, well, we all love Stokesy, don't we?
How can you not? He's the he's the superstar, isn't he? He's been around for many years now. And we know it's not going to be a long-term appointment. And obviously, people know of our relationship with Joe. It's a testament to Joe, most successful England captain ever. Well done to him. It's nice to see that he'll be able to become England's greatest player. I think no one really doubts that unless something major happens. I just want to see him grow and grow as a player. But to have Stokesy leading the line with Rob Key, and which is a really positive appointment. And at the time of putting this out, the big rumour is that Brendan McCullum is going to be the test coach, which seems like an incredibly exciting appointment for an England fan. It's a little bit of a diversion from the path we've been taking previously. And why not, eh? Why not try something new and try something like that? He's an absolute proven winner. And I think you've got, with Brendan McCullum and Stokesy, too, absolute proven winners in the camp. So maybe that's the magic formula.
Brendan McCullum was always a thorn in England's side, wasn't he? Just seemed to remember him just being awesome every time he came up against England. What we could do with is just them both getting a little bit excited and just going really ultra aggressive in a couple of test matches this summer, really, to get a few bums off seats at some of the grounds up and down the country. We'll talk more about all the test matches that we've got coming up throughout the summer, all our plans as well for the Barmy Army throughout the summer, and all the different events that we've got going on, and all the different ways you can obtain tickets, etc., over the next few weeks. Chris, I think we've got plenty of time to chat over the next six episodes or so on these little intros, so I think we should just get straight into it, shouldn't we, with Sakib Mahmood here on the Shackles Are Off podcast. Sakib Mahmood, absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast again. I know you came on, it was T20 World Cup time, wasn't it, when you were on last, and we didn't have very long with you. We'll try and ask you a few more bits and bobs, but there's been quite a lot that's happened since, in fairness, making your test debut and just basically just loving it. And I think we're going to take a bit of credit for it, I think, actually.
it was a T20 World Cup. I remember because I threw out some pretty big statements at the time about our game with Australia, which was on Twitter afterwards. So I was slightly worried about that, but yeah, luckily I was right with those statements. And yeah, it's been a great winter. It's been that would have been the start of the winter, wouldn't it? So it's been a pretty cool month since.
Quite a lot, Kogi. I can't. The way you said it, like Sakib Mahmood, I can't now say your name, Sakib, without singing your song in my head after. It's like, you've got one of the most infectious songs in the world.
You know what? My brother's the same. Like, I got home and you get home and you want to chill out and stuff. And he's constantly singing it as well. And it was just because he wasn't in Barbados, but he said even through the telly, he could hear it. It was pretty cool.
That's class. That's so good. Do you live with your brother? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's across everything on social media. Probably seeing all our tweets and all the videos and stuff then with all the songs on.
Yeah, he's always posting them. He's been pretty quiet in the last day or two because he's a United fan. So I'm a Liverpool fan and yeah, we dealt with him yesterday. So he's
saw your little
quiet.
Dig to Sam Billings on Twitter. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, Billings is the biggest armchair fan ever. I don't know if he's ever been to United. Yeah, exactly. What's he doing supporting United? Like, all he talks about is he hasn't got a nice thing to say about the North, and then he supports Man United. Like, what's that all about?
Typical Man United fan. Anyway, Sakib, does your brother sing the bowling version or the batting version when he's walking around the house?
The bowling version.
Good to check. Yeah. Got to check, mate.
Class, class. I'll tell you what, for the listeners that haven't heard it, Chuck, do you want to give us a little burst?
Jack in the Moon is bowling. Good bowling. He'll bowl them all out tonight.
So good, so good. That must be, and we speak to a lot of players who make their debut and then they come and speak to us for, you know, after maybe 5, 10, 20 tests, and they'll say, oh, this is one of the best bits about playing international cricket. Is it? Is it really?
In terms of what, the support?
Yeah, the support, the songs, the everything.
I said in an interview in the last couple of weeks, I've played quite a few white ball games now, and you know, we had some great crowds last summer after COVID as well in that Pakistan series, but I haven't had that much fun as I did out in the Caribbean. And I think obviously in England, the crowds are obviously, especially the Pakistan series last summer, it was just loud. It was real. It was probably some of the loudest I've had, but that series, and especially Barbados, because it was obviously my first game, so it's a bit more memorable, was, you know, the sort of stuff that happened there that stays with you forever. And we did, 190 overs in the dirt, but honestly, I came off the field like, and you are shattered and stuff, but it didn't feel like it. Like, there's times where you do 100 overs or even 110 and it feels like forever. But out there, it didn't. And honestly, I think it is down to the support we had. Because every time you're bowling, the song's going on. There's just chants all the time. And that, you know, is something I'm not used to, especially playing in first-class cricket. And then you do that at that level. And yeah, look, I thought it was unbelievable. It's a week I'll definitely never forget.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when you made that ODI debut, you spoke about it. But for those who haven't listened to the last podcast, it was one of the World Cup sort of short snippet podcasts that we did with Sack, and talked about making that ODI debut in kind of strange circumstances, wasn't it? It was that Pakistan series, a whole kind of different 11 came in almost, and you were being on the fringes knocking on the door, and then it was almost like a free hit. This one, it wasn't like that, and it was obviously Test debut, the pinnacle, etc. And you had a bit of build-up for it. I mean, when it's been coming for such a long time, and you know how good a bowler you are, and, you know, even if the wider public probably didn't, but you must have been thinking, oh my word, like, I'm going to make my Test debut at some point over the next few weeks here, probably. How did you feel leading up to it? I mean, is it more excited than nervous, I'm guessing?
Mate, if the weeks leading up to it, and obviously after I found out it got picked in the squads and stuff, it didn't feel too different, you know, before going on. And you know, I didn't really think too much about playing or anything like that. It was because I've been on Test tours. I've been on every away tour since I first got called up to the squad, and just haven't played. And sometimes it's obviously you get into a Test squad and you almost know you're not going to play or whatever. So from my point of view, was sort of a few days before we flew out, Ruti called me, and you know, he was just like, look, he wanted me to offer in the dressing room. He was like, even though you haven't played, you've been around the squad for a few years now, and he wanted me to speak up. And that was massive. He gave me so much confidence before that tour. And then we had a few meetings at the start of the tour and stuff about how we wanted to go about it. And honestly, for the first time, this is before I've even played, but this was the first time, I reckon, where that group started to feel like my team. Whereas in the past, when I've been on tours and stuff, it didn't feel like my team. It felt like somebody else's team and I was just there. I think that's maybe just because I probably knew I wasn't going to play or anything like that. But in the lead up to this one, I definitely felt like, you know, I had a part to play. I had a voice in the dressing room as well. And I think all of those feelings just make you take in what's going on and preparing and all of that stuff. But it was actually until after Ruti mentioned it to me. It was the day before the Test match when, you know, I could be playing. I was in the 12 for the first test and then missed out in the morning of the game. But then in the second one, I found out the day before. And it was a weird feeling. And I remember sort of, we went out for dinner. It was me, Stokesy, Robbo, might have been a few other guys. But I remember walking back to my room with those guys as we were just leaving at the end. And Robbo asked me, "Are you nervous?" And that was when I started to first think about, like, I was just cracking on with my day, and then he obviously mentioned about, you know, about his and stuff, and I think, you know, obviously my room was first, so I'd got into my room, and I, you know, I said to him that I was feeling nervous, so he must have mentioned it to Stokesy, because then literally 5 minutes later I got a text of Stokesy saying, "Don't be nervous, mate, just do what you've been doing," like, and all of that. So but yeah, that's sort of when I felt it. And I think once you're in the game, you're just in the game. I'll tell you what though, because when we bowled, so we bowled day two in the last session.
Yeah.
I actually think the best thing that could have happened to me was that only being one session. So I'd only bowled 4 or 5 overs that session, only fielded for 30 overs or whatever it was. But I came off that session just exhausted. I don't know whether I was just tense or just overthinking, all of that stuff. But I came off just absolutely drained. I was thinking, I've got a whole day of this tomorrow. But I think the next day I was a lot more chilled out, because, you know, I was having a role to play with certain things, and you just think about the game. But yeah, I'm glad it was only a session and not a whole day to start, if that makes sense.
What was the emotion like when you took that first wicket? That wasn't, was it a bit of a roller coaster for you?
So I'd bowled a few no balls that game, but so I'd bowled all my overs the other end to where I actually bowled that no ball. I bowled all my overs the other end. And if you watch back on the telly, there's like this little grid. And to this day, I don't know why they're there. But there was a little grid just near where I take off in my run-up. And usually I like coming from a little wider. So if you watch back, if anyone watches back, you'll see this grid. And the wind was blowing from left to right as well. So I wanted to start wider because the wind was dragging me in. But this grid, all of a sudden, once it's in your head, that's when you're aware of it. And there was a few times where I yipped up in my run-up a little bit. And then all of a sudden, I'm thinking about this little grid that's on the floor, which I wasn't thinking about in my first few overs. So then I managed to swap ends. I think it was after about 20 overs, but finally managed to swap ends and felt miles better. I remember saying to Stokes, who was at mid-off, I was like, how's it taking me so long to bowl this end? I feel unbelievable this side. And I was fine on the line, because I was always asking. I was like half and half. And I was just getting a little bit of shape back. So I tried, you know, I just thought about, because earlier in the game, I'd hit him on the foot with the Yorker as well, which just came back a touch, which was outside the line on review. So I thought, I'm going to go for it again and nail it. But because when I try and bowl my Yorker, I got a little bit longer in my stride. I just overstepped, as everyone saw, but yeah, I just remember sort of it's a bit of a blur, but I remember looking back at the umpire as Stokesy and Rooty are hugging me and just see him sticking his arm out. And I was just I was just like, oh my God.
No, you can say that, mate.
All good. Mate, that must be the most frustrating feeling in the world, particularly when we saw Matt Fisher get one with, what was it, his fourth ball or third ball?
Second ball.
So you kind of go, oh my word, you know, that monkey gone straight off his back. And then, and then you're obviously waiting around, you know, a little bit longer, and then that happens and you've got even longer to. What was it like when the moment initially did come though? Because, you know, I'd imagine there's a sense of relief, but also, you know, you probably don't think of it like this because you've had so many different milestones in your career, first ODI wickets and first class wickets and first wickets for Lancashire, you know, in the twos or whatever it may be. But that first test wicket, there must be a moment, a part of you that kind of thinks back to young Saqib Mahmood in his teens, playing academy cricket, club cricket and all that, and you finally got that test pole. It must be an unbelievable thing to have under your belt.
Mate, I think for one, it just felt like such a relief because it came on day four, so we'd bowled the whole of day three. Day three evening session was when I did get the wicket off the no ball. And that's when thoughts start to creep in your head. So I went to bed that night thinking, is it going to come? Am I going to be that guy who plays and doesn't take a wicket? So all of these thoughts do start coming in your head because the wicket was ridiculously flat. And it was one of those where you almost think, we might just bowl on this once and, you know, I might not get a wicket. But I think that's, for me, I think having Rooty and Stokesy around me at that time was amazing because as soon as I did it, Stokesy grabbed me like a firm grip on my shoulder. It wasn't just like a comment. He grabbed hold of me and was like, look, it's happened. Like, I did it on my debut as well. Just forget about it. Just carry on doing your thing. And then Rooty spoke to me later as well and said, look, you bowled unbelievably well so far. He was like, it's easy for it to start slipping off now and you just throw it all away. Stick to it, your rewards will come. And he was like, I don't want it to sound like a cliche, but he was like, just keep doing the good things. And, you know, I was really put to the test with that. But having those guys telling you that, it just makes you keep trusting the process, and then obviously the rewards will come. But when it finally did come, unbelievable catch by Fish, because it went high, swirling,
yeah,
big breeze as well. And there was like a little blind spot where I couldn't see, because his body was covering whether he'd caught it or not. So I was sort of waiting. So as soon as I saw he caught the ball, I then looked to the umpire. And I'm just like waiting for a sec. And then I think I pointed at the feet or something. And he was just like, you're fine. But once that happened, it was just a relief. And if anything, it just gives you a bit more sort of spurt of energy after that, where, you know, you've almost got a second wind. And managed to get my second soon after as well.
So good. And just on Stokesy and Rooty, I mean, we're not going to get into the whole captaincy nonsense because there's no point. But just as blokes, they've played, you know, nearly 200 test matches between them. And they've seen it all, haven't they? I mean, if you think that Joe made his debut in the same team as Kevin Peterson, and Stokes has obviously done what he's done for England, but yet they seem like they'd be far more approachable. I remember when Joe first got in the team and talking to him about certain people, sort of, let's say, leadership group type players. And they probably weren't as forthcoming or as, I'm not going to say soft. Soft's the wrong word, but, you know, more approachable than Stokes and Root are now. I mean, how good have they been for you? I mean, that touch of class from Joe there before you've flown out and having a chat with you, and then equally the fact that Stokes is really wanting, and that's for the benefit of you, that's for the benefit of the team. That's not for them, is it? And that's the bit that we don't see watching on the sidelines or at home. I mean, how good have they been? And what, just try and talk to, I mean, not just those two, but some of the other senior players as well, you know, Johnny Bairstow, et cetera, as well, because they've been around for a while now. These are the figures that when you've grown up watching cricket, these are like, you know, the top brass. These are like the Strauss and Cook equivalent, really, that you're playing alongside.
Yeah, and for me, I think obviously for me, it started last summer playing under Stokesy, and, you know, he gets to captain me, and, you know, I get a relationship. We work together, and it all went amazingly well for me last summer. And that was sort of where we built a great relationship, and we got on really well from then on since. And then for it was similar, it's sort of a similar process with Rooty, where even though I was with the Lions, he wanted to get to know more about my game. So rather than fielding at slip, he wanted to come at mid-off so we could chat about, you know, what kind of plans we have and things like that, just because he wanted to sort of start to know how I work. And I just think once you have the backing of two players like that, you know, of that caliber, then for someone who's just come into the side, it gives you so much confidence, because so reverse swing was massive out in the West Indies. And so we do that very well at Lancashire, and it's something I have a big part in saying and how we go about things. And then you bring that into this dressing room, and Rooty and Stokes here, you know, are speaking to me and, you know, telling me to share my thoughts on that. And I think when you get given that sort of role, or just that sort of opportunity to express yourself and just speak, then even for someone like me, then I'll start to grow in confidence. I'll start to speak more. And all of a sudden you start to feel like you've got a leadership figure, even though you haven't played or you've only played two games. I did start to feel like I could say things and people were listening. And that comes from having the respect from the guys at the top. And those two, you know, if you were a fly on the wall, in that dressing room, you'd see that a lot of the stuff that these two were leading. But the beauty of that squad or that team out there was everyone else was offering as well. I think you saw a few clips of certain after certain days play, but the great thing about that trip was everyone was offering. But those two guys were definitely at the forefront. And but yeah, I think the way, you know, I just think the way they gave, not just me, but I think other players as well, the opportunity to speak up in the dressing room would have helped everyone.
You can see that.
Definitely did for me.
You can see that from where we are. Like, I've been on a lot of tours with the Barmy Army, and I've been very fortunate to go on all these tours. But as a collective and as a team, you look like such a unit. You did look like a big group of mates that were all flying at the highest level, elite level of the game. And it's great to, as a fan, it's amazing to see, because you're sat in the stands and you're watching you guys bonding like we're bonding with each other in the stands. And it just gives it one big touring cohesive feel to it. And it was really good to see that sort of environment was created by obviously the senior guys, but also the younger guys coming through and being able to add a bit of value, I guess.
Yeah, exactly that. And for me, I think in Red Bull tours, in all the Red Bull tours I've done and squads I've been involved in, this is the most fun I've had. And I just think because everyone was doing stuff together, and we actually had a lot of success. And I remember coming off the field on day three, or the evening of day three, in the Grenada test, where we'd had a terrible day.
Yeah.
And a lot of the boys, and you can see especially the guys at the top as well, were seriously gutted. Just because I felt like this squad had come so far over the last couple of games. And we had 10 days of great cricket where we dominated proceedings, like literally dominated. We were the only side pushing for a result.
Yeah.
But then you just have one bad day of cricket. And that the reality is the last 10 days don't really stand for anything. But then everyone forgets about what happened. But in those 10 days in the first two tests, we played some unbelievable cricket. And it was just a shame that obviously at the end of it, you know, that probably won't be remembered from that tour. But I think the way everyone went about it out there, it was very enjoyable. And I think you could see that out on the field as well. You're not getting through 190 overs in the heat in Barbados without obviously the support from you guys, but enjoying each other's company and everyone trying to work towards the same goal. If you have certain guys who are just like, this is flat, can't be bothered, then it'll just be one of those games where it goes into a draw, no one's too bothered. But everyone had the same drive of obviously trying to make things happen.
Yeah. As fans, we had the same feeling as you guys. And I genuinely don't think it was reflected in the press very well at all, because that tour was very bad sessions. But essentially across the rest of the tour, you've been the better side through the whole period of the tour. But because it was the last few sessions of a final test match, it was reported as one of the worst tours for a long time, and it just isn't true. And
But Chris, that's the cricket media though, pal, isn't it? Unbelievable. I mean, the cricket journos and stuff are just unbelievably fickle. And even I wasn't even out there with you, and you still see it, and it's a shame, isn't it? But I suppose that's your first taste of all that sack though, isn't it? Seeing it all over the back pages and all that kind of nonsense. And I mean, you seem like the sort of bloke who's not really bothered by all that anyway. But it was completely different. Basically, yeah. I mean, you can testify better than anybody else. There's probably only, 20 other people who were in that dressing room. And you know that actually it was really good for the most part. And Chris and I appreciate that as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, and look, you obviously get the side the media are coming from, because, and I remember doing an interview the day before the third test where it was like, look, we've played great cricket for 10 days, but the reality is it doesn't stand for anything now. You end up losing the series, and you can't expect them to write anything good, because if they write anything good, then everyone, the neutral supporters are going to be like, we've just lost the series. How can you write good things? So that's just how the game goes, unfortunately. But I'd like to think a lot of people would have taken some confidence away from that trip.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. Hey, we're going to talk about... this kind of got lost a little bit in it with all that, all the negative nonsense from the cricket and journalists. 49 you made in the third test, which was awesome. Apart from, it wasn't so awesome if you were you, because you were probably looking up at the balcony and seeing the rest of your teammates all sat there with the whites on the entirety of your innings. That's, I mean, I suppose it probably wasn't really the time or place, but that's not very nice, is it?
Well, look, I don't know what they've seen, but I felt like I was batting pretty well in the nets. And, you know, I've been going pretty nicely in the nets and stuff. And then, they all had their whites on. And to be fair, with some of the balls that were bowled that day, they probably thought it's only a matter of time. Like, he's not keeping them out. It was one of those. I didn't see it as soon as I went in, but then sort of after five overs, I remember seeing one of the lads walking down the stairs in his whites. So then sort of look over again, everyone's got their whites on. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? But I remember later on in the innings, I did look over to see if anyone had taken them off, but they hadn't. So they'd left them on. But yeah, look, that was, it was an unbelievable evening with Leach that day. And yeah, it was bizarre. It was bizarre. I think almost because it was just one of those things where you almost feel like a ball's got your name on it. So you just try your best to see him out. And if you do get a good one, you get a good one. I'm number 11. No one's really going to expect me to hang around. But yeah, to finish on what I did, I was buzzing. But yeah, just should have watched it at the last over as well.
Oh.
You know what it was? I think it was the first time in that innings where, yeah, it's funny I say this as a number 11 batter, where a little bit of arrogance crept in. Just because, you know, everything was going nice, and to be fair, the beans were going, because I'd gone back and forth with a few of the West Indies boys. And it was basically just me as well, because Leach is the complete opposite to how I am. Leach is calm, he's chilled. Whereas as soon as, like, if somebody says anything to me, like, I'm going back. And it's just like me versus a few of those guys, a few things which the cameras picked up. Because every time I say something, which I probably shouldn't, my dad always is like, what the hell are you doing? There's been a couple of times where I've said something while playing on telly and my dad nails me after. But I think he started to see the funny side of it this time, because there was a few things picked up. But yeah, I just remember that last over, I was on 45 and Blackwood had come on, and they had all the men up, and he bowled his first two balls. And honestly, my thought process in my head, I was like, this is absolute dross. I was like, this is, he's not spinning it, he's not drifting it, he's about 5 foot, so he's not going to like rag one past. I thought, I'm going to hit him for six here. I was like, so my thought process, I'm going to come down. If it's there, it's going. If it's not, I'll play it properly. So I had some sort of thought process. Came down, it was there, and I just smoked it, but it went flat instead of high.
Yeah.
So it went for four, and now I'm on 49. And then there was Brathwaite and Blackwood sort of deciding what to do with long on, whether to keep him up or put him back. Anyway, they decided to put him back. And I thought in my head, I thought Christmas. I thought this is one and I'm getting 50. But that ball wasn't there to hit for long on. And there were still three more balls left. So I should have just seen that one out. Till this day, mate, I swear to you, I still think about that ball and I'm like, just knock it into the offside, do this, do that. This is probably my best chance to get 50, I reckon.
Has it kept you awake?
Sometimes I do find myself just thinking, and obviously since I've been back, the Lanx boys will be talking about it, and then it just gets me thinking about it even more. And because I did say to Jeets while I was, you know, he flicked at me quite a few times and bowled some off spin at me in the net, so I was saying, oh, I'm gonna get 150 at least this season, talking about a first class 50. Little did I think it would happen in the next game I played for England.
Yeah. Did you get any verbals, Sack, when you were walking off? The West Indies boys? No.
It was actually, I got a few role plays and stuff. I just heard it in the background a little bit, but for me, it was just head down, walked off. Didn't even think about the fact that I just left Leachy in the middle. I just turned around and walked off. But you know, it was nice because after the series, so me and Jaden Seals, for example, we had a lot of back and forth. Mainly when those boys were bowling. I didn't say a great deal when I was bowling, but yeah. It was nice to see, it obviously got me going, and then I'm in the competition a lot more. But then after the series, you know, we got together with the West Indies boys and stuff, and he was actually someone I managed to get on with really well, and I think we're sort of similar characters, and we had a bit of a laugh about how it went out there. I had him out twice in the two tests we played. We had no reviews left and the umpire didn't give him out LBW, so I did let him know about that as well.
Quality.
But now, yeah, I'd have taken 50, but yeah, I'm not complaining with 49.
Well, you've got the highest test average, mate. Test average of 52 at the moment. So,
you know what? There's actually this TikTok I got sent by so many people. I don't know if you guys have seen it. There's a video, and I woke up one morning, and I swear to you, about 10 people had sent me this TikTok. So I click on it and it's got test batting averages, and there's a video, and then there's Ruti who averages 49 point something, and then there's Kohli who averages 49 point something, and then it's got me at 52, and I was just like, what is this video come from? Like, I can't post it anyway. Look, too arrogant that. I was like, my average is only going one way from here, so I'll make the most of it while I can.
You never know.
If you're not out, she'll be sound.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's my motivation now. Just blocking that.
Stay at 11, Reading, because all your career you'll be sound.
Yeah. Correct. You've got the head start now. You've got no excuse, Zach.
You know what the issue is now is expectations. Is before that nobody's got any expectation. You walk in at 11. Now everyone expects you to stick. You know, expectations are high. There's a bit more pressure as well. So got a reputation to live by now.
Quality.
We're gonna ask you about your dream kind of cricket tee in just a moment. So just maybe think about that whilst I just talk
dream
to you
cricket
about
tea.
Yeah. We'll ask you about that in a moment. Okay. I just want to ask you. I mean, look, you've played franchise stuff. You played BBL last winter, and then you've just turned down an IPL contract. Focusing on Red Bull as we record this, you're probably going to play for Lancs next week in the Championship.
Tomorrow.
What's the thinking? Tomorrow. There we go.
Yeah.
What's the thinking behind that, Zach?
So look, obviously in the last couple of winters, I have played a fair bit of franchise cricket, PSL, Big Bash. And a lot of that has just been because, well, there's nothing else going on in the winter. And I remember when I first sort of broke into the England T20 side, I was the only one who was lacking experience, really. Everyone else had played over 100 T20 games and I hadn't played a great deal. So for me, it was get out of my comfort zone at Lancashire, go and play in these teams where, you know, they've got high expectations of me and I've got no real specific role. I'll bowl when they need me to. So, for example, for Lancs, I'd only ever bowl in the power play or over 16 to 20. Never bowled 6 to 16. My first game for England, I'm bowling over 6 to 16 and it was just new for me. But the reality was, I always have the same role for Lancashire and I didn't have a great deal of experience. So that's what it was get out, experience a few things. And even for this winter, it was the Ashes are on in Australia. Not in the squad. Go and play in the Big Bash. The World Cup's there in 12 months. And if there's a slight chance of you getting called up, then great. Because I remember the offer came from the Big Bash last summer and Spoons was the one who encouraged me to go. If I was in the squad, then obviously you don't go. But he said that way it'll keep you in the country, which is good for them. So, that was the thinking behind all of that. And then with the IPL, it was a replacement offer which came in for one of the seamers who was injured. And I think I said it came at a time where I just had breakfast with Stokesy and we were chatting about his IPL stuff and you could see the drive he had of this test team moving forward. And, you know, like I spoke about earlier, it was the first time it started to feel like my team and all of that. And sort of, you know, I left that chat like really motivated, like about moving this team forward and I was going to be a part of it as well and all of that. And then all of a sudden, this comes through and I remember speaking to my agent about it and I just mentioned to him about my chat as well and he was just like, look, sleep on it, have a couple of days, you might change your mind tomorrow. Anyway, we had a chat and my agent had this same view as well. It was just like, this is a Red Bull opportunity where I've waited 2.5 years for it. Doesn't come around too often. Is just put everything I can into this. For the next few months, it might come off. I might not play in the summer. It doesn't. But as long as I know in myself that I've given myself the best chance to be ready and potentially get picked in that test series come the summer, then, you know, that's all I can do for myself. And I was actually very relieved that I did make that decision when I got home, especially how that series went, because, you know, I was pretty exhausted after that series. But then also it was, you start looking forward and I wanted to be in a position where I'm ready for if I was to be picked in the first test of the summer. So, that was my thinking about it. And look, if I'm, my priority is, and something I've said before, is playing for England. Franchise cricket's there because it's an opportunity to go and play cricket while there's nothing else on. If I'm in a position where I'm sort of in the squads for all four formats for England, that's all I'm thinking about. That's your priority. So look, I think the IPL is something I'd love to do one day. I think even watching it on telly, all the best players play in the world. And sometimes, look, the money's great as well. But the thing is, as an athlete and, you know, as a cricketer, you almost want to test yourself against the best as well at times. And if I'm ever in a position where I feel like I'm at that level, I'd love to go and play with and against some of the best guys in the world. Because you come away from doing well in a tournament like that, then it can give you a real a real boost. But I think right now, that wasn't the right thing for me. I probably wouldn't have played anyway. So, right now, I think this was the right decision, and I'm happy I made this one.
Well, quality. Love it.
Great to hear, isn't it, Greggy? Great to hear that from a fan's perspective, someone that what we've watched of you over the past couple of months looks every part of the Test cricketer. So it's exciting to hear that you're passionate about the Red Bull game and as passionate as we are as fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Here. But also quality from your agent, because he could have seen the dollar signs there. He could have been going, ching.
You know what? Exactly. And it makes you have so much respect that you've... And I'm quite lucky that I have these types of people around me. And, you know, Stokesy is someone who I feel like I can always speak to. Mo and Rash, who I'm real close with, they were other guys I always speak to. So these guys, I'd always speak to them about advice as well. They're older, they've been and done it all. And, you know, I'd like to think that they can help guide me as well. But even with my manager, he could have easily had a nice little payday there for him. But he thought the best thing for me at the time is always to focus on Test cricket. And it just, for me as well, it just means I've got the right people around me who are going to give me advice that's in the best interest for me as well. So from that side, I went away from that having a lot more respect for him as well.
You know what? Quality, that. Seriously, that's awesome. It's, surrounding yourself with good people, so important. And that's actually, to be fair, Chris, isn't it, why people like Stokesy and Joe and Joss, they surround themselves with good people as well. So that's really nice to hear, actually, mate. Absolutely. It's really nice to hear. Looking forward to a bit of county championship action as well. Right, before we go, mate, dream cricket tee. So this is something new. So you're you've got no yardstick. That's the positive thing here. There's nobody who's been before you, so we can't, like, you know, compare you to someone else and go, come on, they had this. However, you are also now setting the benchmark for everyone else, mate. So... what we ask you to do is pick a drink, a sandwich, a savoury snack, and a sweet treat.
Okay.
So this is dream cricket tea. It could be a long day in the dirt. You could have actually been sat in the pavilion with your feet up all afternoon watching the openers put on 300. Whatever it could be. Come on then, drink, sandwich, savoury snack, sweet treat. Go for it.
Right, so if you go, so this is me right now thinking if I'm playing club cricket, because if I start thinking like this, then if my nutritionist or some of the coaches are watching this, they'll be like,
we're not talking Lords either.
So my club cricket, I'm going, so I was one of those guys, cheese sandwich, but then fill it with crisps. That's me. As soon as, if there's some crisps, best believe I'm putting crisps on the plate and filling my sandwiches up with that. So that's what I'll go with.
I love
drink
that.
Drink hot drink, cold drink,
you choose,
and any drink you choose, mate.
I'm going a cup of tea with biscuits.
Yes,
nice.
And a nice little selection of biscuits, a few digestives, some bourbons, Jammy Dodgers, I reckon.
You're talking full on, like, tray, different selection.
Yeah, a selection. Yeah. What else did we have?
Oh, and a savory snack. Your sweet treat. I think you've kind of nicked that with your biscuits and your bourbons. You know, that doesn't come as part of the drink, does it?
You know what? I'd take that.
All right, sound. So, a cup of tea, cheese sandwich with a load of crisps in, which, by the way, I'm rating personally. And then savoury snack. So it can be anything. Savoury snack.
Tell you what, Sack, you're a cheap date.
You are. Isn't
yeah.
You?
Yeah. Yeah. Savoury snack. See, this is a tricky one. The other stuff, name that stuff to me.
What about... I'm trying to help you out here.
Well, the crisps were in the sandwich, weren't they? So
Maybe they are. Yeah, but Sack, by the sound of it, Sack wants a bit more than that. He's playing club cricket. Come on.
Mate, so the club I grew up at, the Tees, I was quite lucky because the clubs I played for, they were known for having the best tea. So,
was that the motivation?
Yeah, it's what kept me around for a while.
Could have been playing in the IPL. Instead, he was going back and playing for them on a Saturday.
Yeah. No, I'm good. With the savoury, I reckon you could do mince pie. Just like... Easy.
Mince pie. Okay.
Yeah.
Mince pie. That is outstanding.
I'm just going back to like when I used to, not that I have it anymore, but when I used to go to the Chippy or whatever when I was younger, get some mince pie with a bit of gravy on it, chips on the side. Perfect.
Oh, mate.
Can we that have that as a little good. As a little combo? Just
100%.
Yeah. So you've got probably... your warm option, and then you've got you just fancy a little light with your crisps and your sandwiches, and then you know what? That'd actually be top row. That I'm thinking you know what, about it now. You two
are thinking about it as well on your plate now. I am a little bit. I also know that there's a Chippy just up the road from me, and you're probably thinking there's a Chippy not too far from your house.
I reckon that's me. Pie, chips, gravy, and then some sandwiches with crisps on the side.
That's absolutely
amazing. Does your nutritionist listen to this pod, Zach?
I don't know. Someone will end up probably getting around to her. But no, I've been real good. So I'm sure. If you've done a day in the dirt, I'm pretty sure she'd be fine with us having that.
Oh yeah. You know what? She'll definitely see it. We'll probably stick that on TikTok or something like that. Unbelievable. Look, mate, I hope you have an amazing summer, and we'll probably see you at some point. Just go really well. Chris and I, and I'm sure loads of people listening, are absolutely buzzing at the fact that you've chosen the red ball and turned down the bright lights of the IPL. I mean, you know, it's nobody would expect you to do that, but the fact you have is absolutely unreal. So, love it. And
should be a good summer. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah. Big. Good luck.
A lot of cricket.
Enjoy. It all starts. So Lancashire. How many games will you get in for Lancs then?
So I missed the first. There's five left. I'd probably say four.
Okay.
Well, we're quite lucky at Lancs. We've got a lot of good quality seamers. So it might just be a case of just rotating one of us each game.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine. Four, maybe even three, but four is probably what I'm targeting. Yeah,
quality. Enjoy it, mate. Enjoy, and thanks for coming on the pod. Really appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, lads. Single
cheers, time. Mate. Thank you so much. Cheers, pal.
Podcast Network.